I'm a Kinchino. Don't worry if you find that difficult to pronounce. It has taken me a few years to get around to this, so I don't expect this to be the case for you. I would like to take you through some exercises geared around qualities of universal empathy. A part of the Buddhist teaching, which goes by the name of Appamannya, immeasurable, or Brahmavihara, divine abidings. And I'd like to say a few things, both about the practice of these qualities, but also about their placement in Buddhist teaching, and maybe some of their application in our lives. I'll intersperse the more contextualizing bits in the course of the day, but basically these are days where I'd like us to spend a lot of time actually practicing meditation. The idea for the morning is that we have a break at 12:45, midday break until 2, and we'll practice sitting, some standing and walking meditation. We'll have a look at your postures if you wish me to do so, and if you wish me not to do so, I will not do this. But generally this is a useful feedback on actually how you sit. The practicalities of sitting are quite noticeable after a while. We cannot meditate without our bodies. All big traditions have understood this. And I'm basically pleased being here. I would particularly like to welcome the newcomers. You see, some of the people have survived this experience, so this is obviously safe enough for you to engage with this, and I like to attend if you have needs. I'd like to respond to that, so don't hesitate to ask questions or let me know if I use a term that doesn't make sense. Sometimes it's because of bad English, and sometimes it's because a Pali term slips in that gets uncommented or so. For either reason, I'm happy to respond. Yeah? Are you warm enough? Yeah? Do you have enough cushions? There is a spare cushion here. I recommend those.
Some of that, sir.
Okay. For the, yeah? The idea that you use these cushions as wedges rather than as upholstery. Yeah, so that you sit on the edge of those cushions. That helps your pelvis to have a slight lift, and that is generally easier on your thigh muscles. The higher you are, the less that muscle is tensed. And if you are not a practicing yogi or yogini, you may find it easier to get as more of your body onto the mat if you sit a little higher. Yeah? The idea is to avoid sitting just on the tip of your coccyx. Yeah, so this is not esoterics, this is physics. The distribution of weight onto as much surface minimizes the actual pressure on the square inch in this country. Good.
What advice do you give for the chair?
I would advise you to take something underneath your feet, just to make sure that you're not cold on underneath, and that you put both soles of the feet firmly planted with some weight on your heel. That you either stay away from the backrest, or that you put something between the small of your back and the backrest, that you sit upright from out of your pelvis, you know, so that you kind of held rather than sagging. Again, the reason for sitting upright is not aesthetics or a particular brand of Buddhist masochism or so. It's because your diaphragm, a crucial part of your breathing movement, is connected with your lumbar spine. The diaphragm is a funny piece of body. It's half muscle and half membrane, and it is connected to the back of your spine. So if your spine is sagging, that membrane is more taut than need be. If you're exaggeratedly hollow, again, the diaphragm is taut. And if you're reasonably upright, it has its greatest degree of flexibility, meaning you have the least amount of effort to actually breathe, and you have the best volume for your breath flow. There's also other advantages, things like your head, which is a remarkably heavy commodity, is a lot more easily carried if it is aligned with the plumb line, basically. Yeah, if you have a good fulcrum here. So if you're at it, try to get as much of yourself onto the mat. If you're on a chair, make sure that you don't cross your limbs. If you can put something underneath your feet, this is generally better to keep warm. Make sure you have some weight on your feet. And then there's three crucial areas. One is pelvic area, where I'd like to invite you to actually touch the small of your back with the back of your hand, and feel that a little movement of your pelvis rolling back fills up that space. Yeah. The idea is not to have a hollow back. The idea is to have a straight back at the same without collapsing here. Yeah. So next key area is above your chest, yeah, bronchial area. And try to open this at the risk of feeling slightly exaggerated or artificial or even a little conceited. Yeah, so without hollowing the back, keeping this open. And then the next bit is the head. So with little movements of your chin, you can adjust basically the pivot or the fulcrum point of your head. Yeah. If you exaggerate, pull it in, you go sort of a real full zazen, kind of lengthened posture. And then you do the opposite, you jut your chin forward. And then you're kind of looking best with closed eyes for a point where the head has the least amount of weight. It's not necessarily the point which feels most normal, unless your normal posture is just about perfect. We have to mistrust normalcy. We have to listen more deeply than just go to the place where it feels normal. So try to find out these two criteria. One is the tone in your neck and the tone around your larynx and your muscles. And the other one is the weight of your head. Generally, where that head has the least amount of weight, this is fairly close to the optimal fulcrum. So fiddle a little bit with that, and then open your eyes. I'd like you to make a little exercise and actually lift the gaze, yeah, so that the axis of your gaze is horizontal, rather than looking down or even invert yourself further. Actually, try to keep your gaze up and horizontal. Even if you close your eyes, make sure that you close them after you've lifted up your gaze. This is a very powerful means of actually getting your head into a good position. Good, let's begin. If you close your eyes, usually after a second or two, this is a discernible shift. My attention changes gear with the dropping away of my most dominant sense, my visual sense. I become more aware of my internal experience. So sometimes this is my thoughts, sometimes this is my body sensations, often it is mood, sometimes it's images. But an untrained mind generally defaults to thinking. So as soon as I close my eyes, I begin to think. I feel my moods better. I may take note more clearly of my body tone. I may become more aware of the sounds or the silence. And often these two go together. If I hear the sound more clearly, then I hear the silence that envelops that sound. Or, you know, that little bird which punctuates the silence that envelops it. So I'd like you to just take stock. What's here with you? But that taking stock, I would like, under certain auspices. The auspices would be leaving out the past. So anything connected with memory right now would not be a legit object of your attention. So that you make a deal with yourself. As soon as you notice it's about yesterday, or it's about my life, or it's about my childhood, or it's about just 10 minutes ago, you say, okay, this is a memory. This is a thing about the past. And right now, I'm actually not attending to things of the past. I'm attending to things as I can experience them immediately. I renounce the past. You know, grand statement. Or at least, I renounce the memory of the past. You know, let's kind of get it down a notch. Just, you don't have to stop having a history. We're only asking you to stop thinking about your history right now. And the same we do about the future. Some of us think more about the future. Generally, the younger we are, the more we think of the future, and the older we get, we think more about the past. That seems to be the statistical values on this one. But both of them are basically taking our attention away from the present moment. A magic space, that present moment, doesn't really exist, to be honest. There is no such thing as a now. Every now is constructed, every present moment has a duration. But still, we have access to something in which our senses operate. Present moment is when I hear, when I feel in the body, when I become aware of my concepts, when I listen, when I taste, when I smell. All this is present tense experience. And we like to favor present tense experience for the duration of our exercises. Sometimes that's easy if present tense experience is attractive and appealing to us. We find it very easy to be in present tense. If it is not very attractive, or if it is even unpleasant, then we don't find it easy to attend to present tense experience. Anecdotal evidence has it that we spend a considerable amount of our time outside of present tense experience. This is quite okay. Problem is, we can only really be happy in present tense experience. We can only enjoy in present tense experience. We can only be free in the present moment. We can only learn in the present moment. So as long as we are not in the present moment, a whole range of stuff that is really important to our hearts is actually not taking place. And we often don't notice that. We keep rehashing past bits, we keep fantasizing, and we don't actually notice that right now we forsake the possibility to do things, feel things, change things, learn things, to be part of things, to love, to understand. All this we miss out on if we miss out on the present moment. So that's why meditation tries to help us anchor our awareness in the present moment, irrespective of whether that present moment is particularly nice or particularly horrible. So, enough theory. Scan through your body and find out what's there. Can you feel the distribution of weight, for example? Which parts of your body make contact with the cushion, the chair, the mat, the bench? Is that weight equally spread? Does the left side of my body, my calf, my thigh, my buttock, feel similar like the right side? Do they carry equal amounts of my body's weight? Just carefully question, and then you go and listen to your body what it actually says. Try to discern different types of contact. Contact of your legs and the contact, say, of your hands. Where your hands feel the body, they may feel the texture of your skirt, your trousers. Notice how difficult it is to be with an unfocused contact sensation, something that isn't pinpointed or that isn't clearly pleasant or clearly unpleasant, something that may be extending. Something that doesn't change. Noticeably, yeah. How difficult it is to be with something that doesn't apparently change. Something in me says, okay, I can feel that, and now what? You know, why should I stay there? What's next? Just trying to be with my full attention, something as unspectacular as the sensation of weight underneath my sit bones, for example. Just feel the body's weight as it feels in this place of the body. And then try a hand, the weight of the hand on my leg. The warmth of that hand in its palm. The coolness on the back of the hand, which may feel a slight draft or a slight bit of fresh air. The weight of the body on its cushion, the weight of the hand on its leg. Now let's do that with the other side of the body. Weight on the cushion, the weight on the hand, off the hand on my leg. Then take a few deep breaths and sense where the body actually expands when it breathes in. We know physiologically that a number of things happen when we breathe in. Collarbones go up. Shoulder blades move away from the rib cage. Rib cage extends. Belly widens. Diaphragm goes down and up. We know an awful lot about the physiology of breathing, but how much do we actually feel? Where do I feel that this body is breathing right now? We're interested in literally feeling the sensation of it. We're not observing it. We're not visualizing it. We're not thinking it. It means we go with our attention to the place in the body where we do feel something, and then we feel it from there. Feel the breath from the pit of our stomach, maybe, or from beneath my belly button, or somewhere deep the inside of my belly, wherever you feel it most vividly. See whether it's possible to just feel whatever you feel. If you don't feel anything, just put a hand on your belly and feel how the in-breath moves the hand. The dilation of the body on breathing in, a slight contraction on breathing out. See whether there is something pleasant in that experience. But there's something in sitting here, breathing and attending to your breath, whether there is something mildly pleasant, something nice, something beautiful. Don't try to be neutral. Just look, is there in that gentle, unspectacular movement of the body sitting here and breathing, is there something I like about this? I don't know. Could be that you find out you don't need to do this. The body knows how to do this. Or it happens unfailingly, whenever I need, this body breathes in. I forget it, it still continues breathing. I think about it, it still continues breathing. I forget it again, it doesn't forget to continue. Or maybe it's something in your posture, yeah? That you're quietly being held by your hips. The solidity of the small of your back, or the softness of your belly, something like that. See whether there's something pleasant in what you experience when you sit here breathing. When the mind strays away, and you notice that it has strayed away from the breath and the body, you gently bring it back. You do that as often as is necessary. Don't expect it to stay with the breath. Expect it to run away. That's the norm. However, we have a choice. We can bring it back, and that's recommended. So I'd like you to do this. Feel the breath in the body, wherever that breath is easiest felt. And then just try to gently, ever so gently, rest your attention on the sensations of breathing as they come, as they increase while breathing in, as they decrease after breathing out, as they end. Good. Please continue doing that. I'll be coming round having a look at your posture, so don't get scared.